Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
Hi, thanks for joining. Please make sure you subscribe to follow us on all the various platforms here on the podcast, as well as on YouTube. The stuff we write on Substack, as well as quick takes on Instagram and on Threads. If you're enjoying what we're putting out there, please make sure you're sharing with all your friends and family. And if you have questions or comments about the stuff we're putting out there, please make sure you leave them in comments to us. We'd be more than happy to cover them in future talks.
We used to get bombarded with advertisements about drinking milk, something that used to come along the lines of things like this advertisement.
Drink your milk, kids.
I don't want milk.
Milk's for babies.
Yeah, babies.
Well, yeah? Well, I happen to know that milk helps build strong bones, so drink up.
Well, Mr. Miller told me he never drinks milk. Look at him.
Yeah.
Drink it.
Oh, that's not good.
Got milk.
That's right. Got milk. Milk is somehow going to be the thing that's going to lead to us having strong bones and not having our arms fall out of our sockets when we try to do outdoor work. But how true are things like that? How true are the claims about needing milk in order to make strong bones? How true is it about the medications that we get pitched about trying to prevent osteoporosis or reversing osteoporosis? There's a lot of myths and misconceptions out there as it relates to bone health and how we can get strong bones and keep strong bones. So, strong bones. How do we get them? How do we keep them? Well, let's talk about that.
Warning. The following presentation contains information that might contradict what you have previously heard, or believed to be true, about how the human body works, and contains material that is not suitable for closed-minded individuals. Enjoy.
When it comes to talking about bones and bone health, when it comes to the discussions that we have around how we go about getting strong bones and keeping strong bones, there's a lot of myths and misconceptions out there. There's a lot of half-truths and untruths that tend to get propagated within popular press, that get propagated within talking points that we have, where we talk about needing milk in order to develop strong bones, where we talk about slogans coming out from the dairy farmers such as milk, it does the body good, or we start looking at some of the advertisements surrounding some of the dietary supplements, such as like citricol for strong bones. But physiologically speaking, what's going to make bones strong? What is the strength that is going to come about from the calcium in our diet, from the other supplements we might take, based on the responses that we see within the bones? This is where you have to take a step back and think about, okay, what actually makes bones strong? What is actually making bones in terms of the development of the bones, as well as the responses that the bones might have to all of the everyday stresses? One of the things we have to start thinking about is, what is bone itself? And when we talk about bone itself, bone is what is commonly referred to as an excitable tissue, even though we don't think about it as being excitable. When we talk about being an excitable tissue, what we're talking about is a tissue that's going to respond to any type of changes in ions within the tissue itself, any type of changes in electrolytes within the system itself, within the tissues itself, within the cells or around the cells. When we're talking about bones, that electrolyte, that salt that we usually talk about is the calcium salts. But it's not really about calcium. We start looking at how bones are responding in terms of their ability to grow and their ability to become strong. The bone tissue itself is excessively metabolically active. There are a whole lot of cellular activities taking place. There's a whole lot of regulatory mechanisms occurring. The activities and regulations that we see function to ensure that the bone is able to withstand all of the stresses that we place on it throughout the day. When we start looking at how bone takes place in terms of this ability to withstand all the stresses that are taking place on it, It comes down to how does the bone grow in response to the stresses? When we talk about bone growth in response to the stresses, what we're really talking about is we're talking about how is the bone able to maintain its bone mineral density. That bone mineral density is the indication of how tough the bone is. That is, how likely is the bone to resist all of the stresses that we place on it. When we start looking at how well is it going to resist the various stresses that are being placed on it, what we're really talking about is how strong is the bone. And this is where we have to go into and look at, okay, what do we mean by strength in terms of physics and in terms of physiology? When we're talking about strength here, we're talking about the resistance to fracture, the resistance to tearing. And that resistance to tearing is based off of all of the cellular actions taking place within the bone tissue itself. All of the cellular activities taking place within the bone tissue itself is going to be governed by a physiological principle. And that physiological principle is what's referenced as Wolf's Law of Bone Remodeling. And we start looking at Wolf's Law of Bone Remodeling, what we're really looking at is we're looking at how does the bone tissue itself go about changing its structure, changing its health in order to maintain the strength that it needs. The idea that we look at with bone mineral density in terms of the expression of the tissue quality of the bone is its ability to resist body weight. That is how much actual load we're placing on the bone. And the way in which it does this is by developing proteins within the tissue itself and then adding to that protein a salt, a mineral. The protein that we're looking at is what's referred to as collagen. That collagen is then going to get fixed into place based off of a salt, a calcium salt, a calcium phosphate salt to be specific, that we reference as hydroxyapatite. There are other factors that come into play in terms of the development of the bone tissue itself, in terms of what we reference as the laminas of the tissue, which is where we look at the things like the glycoproteins, the proteoglycans, the citrate molecules, and the water molecules within the layering of the bone tissue, as well as within the whole entire structure of the bone itself. When we were discussing this kind of bone mineral idea, what we're talking about is we're talking about how are we actually depositing the salts? How are the bone cells, what we refer to as the osteocytes, depositing the bone salts, the hydroxyapatite, around the collagen fibers that allows it to become fixed in what are referred to as laminated rings, sometimes referred to as a laminated matrix, sometimes referred to as an osteon or an ossified bone. The arrangement that we see and the orientation that we see of the proteins and the salts within this matrix, within the osteons, within the ossified laminas, within the bone matrix. Within those arrangements, what we end up getting is we end up getting an electrical arrangement based off of the salts, based off of the positive end in the calcium and the negative end in the phosphate within the hydroxyapatite salt. That gives the bone itself an electrical charge. That electrical charge is what's referred to as a piezoelectrical potential. That piezoelectrical potential, P-I-E-Z-O, electrical, is how it was spelled, so you can pronounce it. That piezoelectrical potential is based on how the ions are arranging themselves within the arrangement of the collagen proteins, so that they're balancing out the positive end of the salt with the negative end of the salt. That balance point is what the bone is attempting to maintain at all times. And the balance point is maintained at all times based off of how the positives and negatives are arranged around each other. Where we have to think about this kind of like magnets, where the positive end is going to attract a negative end, and the negative end is going to attract a positive end. But the positive end is going to repel a positive end, and a negative end is going to repel a negative end. And what the salt crystals do, what the hydroxyapatite crystals do, is that they arrange themselves in such a way to establish what's referred to as a lattice network. The lattice network, you can think of as...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
As kind of like a three-dimensional cube where there's space inside that cube. And at the corners of the cube is where the ions are going to arrange themselves. And what this is going to do is this is going to establish a structure that the bone tissue itself is going to attempt to maintain through all of the various activities that we do. And that arrangement where the positives are lined up with the negatives and the negatives are lined up with the positive establishes the electrical balance point, the piezoelectrical balance point. Whenever we do any type of disruption to that bone matrix, whether it is simply just moving around or whether it is lifting weights, any type of activity that we do throughout the day is going to cause a disruption in that piezoelectrical balance point based off of how the bone is moving around. And this is where we have to start looking at the types of bone tissue that we have and how that piezoelectrical potential is going to be maintained. And this is where we have our two types of bone tissue within our bones. We have to the outer side, to the outside area of the bone, a area of cortical bone, sometimes mistakenly referenced as compact bone. And I say mistakenly referenced because all bone is compact. That compact bone, that cortical bone, is arranged so that the piezoelectrical lines are in parallel with each other. And what it's going to do is it's going to resist being smashed, what we call compression, and being stretched, what we call tension. And what ends up happening is that in our weight-bearing bones, in the bones of our lower extremity, in our vertebrae, in our feet, in our ankles, what happens is that we get two distinct lines of compression and two distinct lines of tension being felt within the bones, where to the inside of the bone, to what we call the medial side of the bone, we will feel compression along that bone line, along that cortical area. To the lateral side, we're going to feel tension. We're going to feel stretching. And we end up having two distinct lines. So on the outside of the bone, we get compression. On the inside of the bone, we get tension. So we get this compression on the inside. We get this tension on the outside. And what that's going to do is that's going to establish a variable line within the bone that the bone is going to attempt to maintain in between being compressed and being stretched. But we do more than just have gravitational forces, the compression and the tension taking place. We also have other forces acting at angles to that bone, whether it is going across the bone or going at a tangent at an angle to the bone, causing shearing forces, that's forces going across the bone, or rotational forces, what we call torsional forces, trying to twist the bone. And this is where we get the other type of bone tissue coming into play. And that's what's referred to as trabecular tissue, sometimes mistakenly called spongy tissue. And the reason why it sometimes gets mistakenly called spongy tissue is because it has a porousness to the bone that resembles a sea sponge or a kitchen sponge, but it's not spongy. It's not soft. It's still very compact. It's still very dense. But instead of having all of the piezoelectric lines aligned parallel to each other to resist the compression and the tension, these piezoelectric lines are done at angles to that long axis of the bone that's going to resist the forces going across the bone or the forces trying to twist the bone. And so what ends up happening in terms of the bone strength off of just that arrangement of the compression and tension lines, as well as the shear lines and the torsion lines due to the cortical and the trabecular bone respectively, what ends up happening is that we get this arrangement of piezoelectrical potential, this piezoelectrical balance point, that establishes a very strong bone against compression and tension within the cortical area and against torsion and shearing in the trabecular area that allows the bone to be both rigid as well as flexible. That means that the bone is able to bend slightly within its geometric axis, within the geometric shape of the bone based off of the depositing of the bone tissue. But at the same time is rigid enough that it's not going to be pulled apart or be smashed together. And this is where we start looking, okay, how does the cells themselves, how does the tissue itself develop this structure? And it's all about how the bone matrix itself gets put down in terms of the developing nature of the bone. So the matrix itself is developed by maintainment due to what's referred to as blastic activity, as building activity, that comes about from osteocytes that become osteoblasts. And those blastic sites start to function with other fibroblastic cells. Those are connective tissue cells that are building collagen proteins. To work off of the collagen proteins, to be specific, the type 1 collagen proteins that are laid out by the fibroblasts. And what's happening is that these osteocytes, these osteoblasts, start to deposit the hydroxyapatite crystals onto that collagen protein. And those salts start to establish that lattice network that will then fix the collagen proteins in place, that will develop the laminas, the sheets of bone matrix that we're trying to maintain. We start talking about having high bone mineral density or low bone mineral density. Within that matrix, there are other things that come into play that are going to assist the idea about the trabecular and the cortical bone in terms of maintaining a rigid, solid bone that still has some flexibility, some pliability within it. And that is where within the hydroxyapatite arrangement, we get secondary molecules coming into play. The secondary molecules that are going to come into play are going to make what we kind of think about as like a goo within the mineral matrix. And that goo is really going to be water interacting with a hydroxyapatite, interacting with a citrate molecule. And the citrate molecule has the ability to interact with the water in such a way that the hydroxyapatite will not interact with the water. It has to deal with the chemistry of stuff in terms of what we reference as being polar and nonpolar interactions, where water is polar and the hydroxyapatite is not going to be able to interact with the polarity of water. And so what the citrate does is it provides the ability for that hydroxyapatite layer to interact with the water. And what this does is this allows for the collagen with the hydroxyapatite within each layer of lamin, within each lamin, within each sheet of bone matrix, the ability to glide and slide around each other that will allow for that weight-bearing bone to have both an elasticity as well as a plasticity within the bone matrix itself, within the bone itself, where the plasticity of the bone is excessively brittle, but it's strong, which means that it's good in terms of rigidity until we load it to its failure point, at which point in time it's going to break very easily. Whereas we have this elasticity within the bone matrix, where it's going to allow for shifting and moving around, that's going to allow for pliability to take place that could limit the total amount of rigidity, the total amount of strength that's there because of how elastic it is going to act. And within that, what ends up happening is we get this kind of counterbalance in between elasticity and plasticity, where as we start having greater amounts of weight bearing within the area and greater amounts of hydration within the tissue, we start to increase the elastic nature of the bone, particularly when we start adding into it greater amounts of trabecula that comes about due to the loading, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, that makes for the bone to be stronger. And all of it comes about due to change.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Changes that come about based off of the loading within the bone matrix that's going to impact the arrangement of the polar and nonpolar areas within the laminas, that's going to impact the arrangement of the salt crystals within the lamina, where instead of having that nice lattice network develop, the lattice network gets disrupted slightly. And that disruption in the lattice network, the disruption that takes place in between all of the ions, gets us out of the piezoelectrical balance point. And in response, the bone is going to start to activate the osteocytes within the bone itself. And then it's going to activate stem cells for the bone, what we call lining cells for the bone, to start to build more bone in an attempt to get back to the electrical balance point. This movement of the bones that take place whenever we are moving the bone or whenever we are loading the bone causes the change in the electrical balance point, and that response that we see within the bone is going to attempt to return us back to the balance point. And this goes back to the idea that I usually talk about with students. We start talking about homeostasis and maintaining the balance point. What we're trying to do is we're trying to be baby bear here. We're trying to make sure that everything is just right. And if we're just doing everyday activities, what we're going to do is we're going to rebalance that electrical balance point back to where it was when it first got disrupted. However, if we are doing greater movements than what we are normally used to doing, or if we're doing greater loads than what we're normally used to loading with, instead of doing this kind of baby bearing where we're trying to make sure everything is just right, we're now going to activate additional cells to come into play. The additional cells that are going to come into play is going to kind of like, almost like, and I use this analogy when I talk about, once again, when I talk about the homeostatic balance issues, where we're almost going to three little pig our way through the response, where we're going to try to get the most strong house that we can get to overcome the stresses of the big bad wolf, where the movement of the bone is going to cause that disruption to take place. And then in response, because it's greater than what we're used to handling, the bone tissue itself, because of activations that take place, is going to lead to greater hydroxyapatite depositing in the areas where the stresses were occurring. But the thing is that we don't want to have bone that is too big. We don't want to have bone that is too heavy, because otherwise it becomes too energetically demanding for us to move our skeleton. Our skeleton really is kind of light, if you actually want to think about the weight that our skeleton happens to be. All the stuff that attaches to the skeleton is kind of heavy though. And so we want to have a light skeleton to move by the heavy stuff that's attached to it. We want to have the light skeleton be strong enough to resist the heavy stuff that's being attached to it. And so while we're putting down more salt, while we're putting down more hydroxyapatite in the areas where we're loading the bone, in the areas where there's less load, we're going to start to break down some of that bone. And this is where we get a secondary type of cell that's coming into play. And the secondary cell that's coming into play is kind of a weird cell, because it's not really a bone cell. It's kind of a mix of multiple types of cells put together that is called an osteoclast. And what the osteoclast is going to do is it's going to absorb the bone material that's not being stressed. And that's because we want to reduce the amount of bone in the area that's not being stressed to counterbalance the greater amount of bone that's being put down in the area that is stressed. And what this does is this provides bone tissue that allows the bone itself to be able to be stressed more without breaking. It's the interaction of those physical forces that are acting on the bone within that cellular responses within the tissue that's going to lead to the changes in the ossification, lead to the changes in the bone making patterns that will cause a change in the structure of the bone, where we're going to get the outer rigid area of the bone, the cortical area, or what people talk about as being compact. That bone area is going to become more rigid. The laminal matrix are going to be larger. That laminal matrix is going to be surrounded by tissue areas, which we call cementation layers, that are going to allow for those parallel piezoelectric potential lines to shift more before they become irregular. So even though it's becoming more rigid, it's also slightly more elastic, which means it's able to resist a little bit more force being placed on it before we start seeing disruption taking place. The laminal matrix that is going to be changing there is going to lead to changes in the geometric axis of the bone itself. that's where we're going to see changes in density in certain areas of the bone, where some areas of the bone become bigger and some areas of the bones become smaller. And this is where we start if we were to take x-rays of highly active people. The areas of the bones that are more loaded, more active than other areas of the bones will have a different shape. And this is one of the cool things that we see when we start taking x-rays of baseball pitchers. Their throwing arm, the bone in the throwing arm looks different than the arm in the catching arm. Same thing for musicians, where violinists will have a different bony structure in their bow arm relative to the arm that's holding the violin. That pattern is going to continue in terms of that modification that we see in terms of total density of tissue as well as geometric axis of the bone itself is going to change as we start looking at what's taking place within the trabecular area. And this is where within the trabecular area, we start seeing changes in the angles that the trabecula takes to itself. And the angles that it takes is meant to establish arches and truss within the trabecula, very similar to arches and truss of bridges that keep the bridge stable when cars are loaded onto the bridge so the bridge doesn't collapse. Same thing is taking place within the trabecula, within the bone itself. And so the structural shape of the bone that's being developed across all of these axes, across the three-dimensional axis, is to establish a bone that is excessively rigid yet elastic, that has a hollow center to it. So if we think about the cross-section or cutting a bone in half, you'll see the open area in the middle of the bone. That's what's usually referred to as the hollow medullary cavity. We want a bone that's going to be nice and rigid in that outer ring with some pliability in the outer ring, with these nice trabecular trabecular spines or trabecular spindles pointing towards each other, developing arches and trusts that establish a hollow cylinder to take place so that the bone itself is excessively strong. It's very resistant to breakage, but it's done without becoming too heavy. The total pattern of bone tissue that we get and the density that we get makes sure that the bone is resistive to the various stresses that are being placed on it. Where the bone tissue and the position of the bone tissue relative to the density of all the other things being placed on it allow for the bone to flex and then return to its original shape when it's being used, and provide the rigidity necessary for the muscles to generate the forces necessary to move the body. And so that's what is taking place when we start looking at this bone matrix. When we start looking at how the bone is developing so that the bone's going to grow, so that the bone is able to become strong. That is the kind of underlying idea here in terms of the bone strength. And so how does the bone keep that strength? How does the bone keep the ability to stay strong? During normal living, we have this process known as bone turnover. This process of bone turnover is controlled hormonally and controlled genetically. And based off of hormone and genetic regulations, which can have a little bit of metabolic regulation tossed into it, what we're going to be able to do is we're able to maintain the bone that we need to maintain based off of all the forces that we have during our everyday life, grow in response to all the other stresses that we have in our life, or potentially lose some amount of bone based off of no longer having the stresses that we have in our life. And so the process that we look at here is controlled by a whole host of factors. There's gene factors, there's load factors. So we have a number of genes that are going to come into play, but we also have to worry about two other things in here. The amount of load being placed on the bone, that is how much force does the bone have to resist. The hormonal signals that are taking place, and we start talking about these hormonal signals, what we're talking about is the balance between growth hormones. Those are hormones that are going to make us grow, not growth hormone itself. The anabolic hormones, the anti-inflammatory hormones versus the inflammatory hormones, our health status regulating our hormonal signals. And then our nutritional balance point. And we start looking at this nutritional balance point. This is where we go back to that the commercial from the milk people. And if you followed anything with any of the politics in 2023, is it related to the whole milk versus the fat-free milk versus the partial fat milks within the United States? They talked a lot about calcium and vitamin D within the foods. While those do have some degree of effect in terms of regulatory processes, the biggest thing that we have to look at in terms of nutritional balance for bone health is making sure that our protein balance points are being met, because we are going to try to fix collagen and we need protein within our diet and amino acids within our diet in order to maintain the protein within the bones themselves. And then we have to worry about the calcium and the vitamin D that comes into play, where those are very minimal in terms of the other things that we look at in terms of that nutritional balance point. Based off of all of the signals that come into play, on average, you're turning over about 10% of all of the bones within your skeleton on a yearly basis, which means that every decade or so, you're basically getting a brand new skeleton. And while we're doing this, while we're trying to develop the bones during infancy, juvenility, and adolescence through childhood into adulthood, and while we're trying to maintain that skeleton once we get to adulthood, going into geriatric age, the idea that we have to remember is that we're turning over our skeleton once a decade. So every 10 years, we basically have a brand new skeleton. And the idea about making that skeleton stronger is making sure that during the turnover process, we are ensuring that the growth signals that are being sent to the bone is going to make the bone denser and make the bone stronger. When the bone is not being used, or when the bone is experiencing large amounts of inflammation, or when we have changes in our physiology due to large amounts of inflammation, the body's going to end up making the bone less dense. Now, within that idea about making the bones less dense, we also have to take into account during that growth phase, getting to that peak of bone mineral density heading into our adulthood, other genetic factors come into play that's going to minimize the peak bone density that we have, and hormonal influences that may impact the peak bone density that we have. And this is where we have to take a look at our anabolic hormones, this is where we have to take a look at our nutritional status, we have to take a look at other things within genetic regulations, or if we happen to have mutations within the genes that minimize the total maximum that we can produce, that lower the total amount of bone density that we produce, that drop our peak bone mineral density at the end of the growth phase. And that's because if I drop the peak that I'm able to deposit within the bone, I'm going to predispose myself to osteoporosis and osteoporotic changes, regardless of my gender and regardless of my age. Where if I do not develop that peak bone mineral density, I'm going to be susceptible to osteoporosis, where there are issues that can come into play in terms of other diseases that minimize the total bone density that I can get, which we'll cover at other times. We start looking at some of the pathology and the pathophysiology on the YouTube videos as relates to bone diseases. But what we're really talking about here is we're talking about the inability to get to peak bone mineral density. And if we're unable to get to peak bone mineral density, we increase the relative risk for osteoporosis. And this is where we have that genetic component to osteoporosis. However, the way in which we usually hear about osteoporosis and the way in which we usually look at treatments to osteoporosis is not in terms of how we go about maintaining bone mineral density or the factors that are going to influence bone mineral density. A lot of times we hear about it, and a lot of times we approach it very similar to what we hear in terms of the advertisements such as this.
Molly leaving was one thing, but then I thought mom's weak bones might keep us stuck on the couch. No way.
If you have postmenopausal osteoporosis and are at high risk for fracture, you can do more than just slow bone loss. You can build new bone in just 12 months with Evenity. Evenity is proven to reduce spine fracture risk by 73%.
I heard her say the Evenity she's taking builds new bone. Builds new bone!
Evenity can increase risk of heart attack, stroke, or death from a cardiovascular problem. Do not take Evenity if you have low blood calcium or are allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions and low blood calcium have occurred. Tell your doctor about jawbone problems as they have been reported with Evenity, or about pain in your hip, groin, or thigh as unusual thigh bone fractures have occurred.
Building new bone? We dig it.
Want stronger bones? Ask your doctor about building new bone with Evenity.
Issues around bone health that basically stipulate that osteoporosis comes about because of postmenopausal age will only be seen in women, that can be reversed through simply taking some medication. And once again, this is just one of the medications that's out there. It's happened to be one of the more recent advertisements that I saw that came about, I believe was on the Super Bowl this last week, that we saw where they advertised this new drug that is somehow going to build more bone. But here's the thing. Bone only grows in response to stress. Bone doesn't grow based off of taking medications. There's very few hormonal things that will trigger bone growth by itself. One of the things we have to remember is what is actually going to make bone strong? What is going to actually maintain healthy, strong bones? The strength and integrity of the bone is maintained based off the level of forces being placed on the bone. We need to stress weight-bearing bones to about 1.5 times body weight. Somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 40 newtons per millimeter squared, somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 9 pounds per millimeter squared in order to keep the bone density constant. Normal everyday activities that we do will typically exceed that minimum level. A lot of what we do will go to about 2.5 times body weight in terms of everyday activity. Where if we think about it, just walking at normal walking pace.
I always had a private doctor. I didn't think I needed VA care. Then I learned VA is ranked above private care systems nearby and costs less. I'm getting the best care of my life with providers trained to treat veterans. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
2 to 3 miles per hour gives me between 1 and 1.5 times body weight per leg. So I'm reaching my minimum. Pool walking at that same level is going to, due to the buoyancy of water, reduce that load to upward to between 80% to 100% of body weight, so 0.8 to 1.0 times body mass. However, we can add additional things to what we're doing in order to get us back up towards that 1 to 1.5 body mass we want. Running, depending upon speed, can go anywhere from 2 to 10 times body mass. Skipping, once again, depending upon the type of skipping that you're doing or the height that you skip, can go anywhere from 1 to 2 times body mass at the minimum, so about 1.5 to 2.5 times body mass at the minimum, up to about 4 to 4.5 times body mass. Once again, depending upon how you're skipping and the height that you're skipping, jumping off of surfaces. So you want to go to the gym, you do the jumps off the boxes. So once again, depending upon the height that you're jumping off of, can go from about 2 times body mass at about 10 centimeters of a bench to about 6.5 times body mass if I'm jumping off about a 50 centimeter bench. If I'm just jumping in place, doing things like jumping jacks, I can get anywhere from 3.5 to about 6 times body mass. For those of us that want to try to be as active as possible, so we skip the elevators and skip the escalators, and we go up the stairs, we can get anywhere from 1.2 to about 1.8 times body mass, depending upon how quickly we're going and the riser on the step. Coming down those same stairs can give me anywhere from 1.5 to 7 times body mass. Once again, depending upon the speed that we're going and the height of the riser. And the difference between going up and coming down and the difference between jumping up onto a box or jumping off of a box is all about physics and the additive properties of potential energy into the load that takes place. The other thing that a lot of us are trying to do based off of being, once again, the recommendations for being physically active is doing weight training, going to the gym and doing weight training. And this is where doing squats and deadlifts doing whole body exercises can give us, for in terms of loading on the weight bearing bones, up to about 100% body weight. Doing just body weight squats, holding in our hands somewhere around a third of our body mass. And then we can go above that once we get past that third of the body mass. So if we happen to be, say, 150 pounds, holding about 50 pounds of weight while doing squats or doing deadlifts will give us that 1.0 times body mass. Where if we decide to go above that 50 pounds, we will get above 1 times body mass. And the amount that we get above that 1 times body mass is all based off of how much additional weight we are holding or how much additional weight we have loaded across our shoulders, depending upon the exercise we're doing. And this is where some people say, okay, I'll do leg pressing instead of doing, say, squats and deadlifts. While the exercise is going to mimic each other, the load that we get put onto the bones is quite different based off of all of the physics that come into play as it relates to how the muscles are working and all of the various aspects that take place in the exercise. And so it's the loading that's going to come into play. Now, there's other aspects that we have to look at when we start looking at all of the factors that come into play as it relates to overall bone health before we get back to the idea about the osteoporosis. So skipping the other parts as it relates to load, what are some of the other factors that are going to end up controlling the bone metabolism that are going to end up controlling bone health? So we do have that mechanical force. And the thing is that all these things are going to come into play, but without that mechanical force, without that physical activity, we're not going to have the bone growth that we want in order to maintain strong bones. Hormonally, we have various hormones that are going to impact the genetic regulators. These include things like the growth hormones, insulin-like growth factor, mechanical growth factor, hepatic growth factor, androgens and testosterone, estrogen and estradiol, cortisol, a whole host of adipokines, a whole host of interleukins, ILs, a whole host of calcium regulators, parathyroid hormone, vitamin D, calcitonin, serotonin is going to come into play. And so if we start looking, okay, what hormones are going to be important in terms of regulating things in order to increase the amount of bone that we have that's going to allow for us to stimulate bone growth? Those are going to be things like insulin-like growth factor, growth hormone, mechanical growth factor, hepatic growth factor, testosterone and androgens. We also have other types of growth factors that are going to come into play that will help with reducing the total amount of reabsorption that takes place due to regulating total amount of inflammation, such as interleukin 4. Interleukin 13, interleukin 18. We have a whole bunch of angiogenic and anti-inflammatory signals, prostaglandins, some of the leukotrienes, some of the nitric oxide signals. We may have some other types of growth factors that come into play here that relate to the ability to grow blood vessels, because we need blood vessels going into the bones in order to make sure that the bones are able to grow and promote additional growth through the bone. But at the same time, we have signals that are going to increase the rate of resorption that are going to reduce total amount of bone material. And that includes a lot of inflammatory signals such as interleukin 1, TNF-alpha and TNF-beta, interleukin 6, interleukin 11. We also have to worry about things like serotonin, things like dopamine in terms of the inflammation that comes into play. We have a whole host of genetic and epigenetic regulators that can come into play, such as NFKB, the SOC1, SOC3, ERK, mTOR, along with a whole bunch of ossification regulatory genes that are all impacted by the hormones that are coming into play, along with intracellular signals. These include things like Wnt, BMPs, the RANK genes, as well as specific genes that are osteoclastic activators and osteoblastic activators. These include things like TRAP, CA2, CATK, on the osteoclastic side, as well as TNAP, OCN, and Brill on the osteoblastic side, as well as osteoclast regulators such as SOST, S-O-S-T, as well as FEX and FGF23, which are all going to be regulating what type of activities taking place in the osteocytes in order to be able to maintain the amount of bone that is there. We also have to worry about health status that comes into play, in particular the accumulation of ROSs, reactive oxidative species, or oxidative stress, the amount of inflammation and the amount of adipokine signals that are going to impact metabolic pathways that will impact our overall health status. And this is where estrogen and estrogen-like substances within our diet is going to come into play, where estrogen and estrogen-like substances are going to kind of help regulate a lot of that inflammatory process, a lot of that ROS process. They do not have a real control on the actual bone growth, the bone anabolism, the making of bone. It can influence the amount of or the modulation and the modification that we see within the bone structure itself, but it's not really going to be tightly regulated in terms of how strong that bone happens to be, independent of controlling inflammation and health status due to ROS and oxidative stress. The other thing we have to look at is we have to look at metabolic and dietary issues. And the metabolic and dietary issues, even though we tend to think about this in terms of the ions, the calcium and the phosphate, we also have to look at other ions that come into play, such as chloride, sodium, magnesium, and fluoride, as well as vitamins, vitamin C, vitamin A, vitamin D, as well as our overall hydration status, how well hydrated we happen to be, in terms of the ability to maintain the formation of the hydroxyapatite and how the vitamins are going to act as cofactors. In the case of vitamin C and citrate, how it's going to embed itself within the hydroxyapatite in order to maintain that bone mineral matrix. And this is where we get kind of some of the misconceptions and some of the confusions that take place in terms of how much we need of those substances, and how much vitamin D we need, and how much vitamin C we need, and how much calcium we need is very low in terms of what we think about in terms of its overall performance in maintaining that bone. And this is where we start looking at, okay, how can we maintain the bone as we go through life? So during growth, what we're trying to do is we're trying to gain the total amount of bone that's available. Growth leads to that peak bone mineral density from infancy through juvenility into adolescence, from childhood through early adulthood. Once we hit adulthood, the next factor that comes into play, which is what that advertisement about the osteoporosis of medicine was hinting at, was specifically as consolidation. That's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to homeostatically balance the total amount of bone material that is there based on use and disuse. This is where we're trying to balance absorption, that is taking back the bone mineral density, and mineralization, that is putting in more bone mineral density. As we head into geriatric, as we start getting into older age, we get to another stage of bone, and that is what's referred to as involution. And this is where in late adulthood and into geriatric, the rate of absorption is greater than the rate of mineralization due to either disease or disuse. Within this change, within this change as we go through life, one of the things we have to remember is that if we want to keep the bone mineral density high, we have to load the bone. Loading the bone is going to lead to greater amounts of mineralization. All of the other factors that we was just listed, all of the other factors that control bone metabolism and bone mineralization are kind of non-factors if we do not load the bone. That loading of the bone, that 1.5 times body mass minimum on the weight-bearing bones, is what is necessary in order to maintain bone mineral density. Anything above that level is going to lead to an increase in bone mineral density. Anything less than that is going to lead to a loss of bone mineral density over time. And that's the key here, over time. That homeostatic disruption of long-term disuse is where we start to lose bone mineral density. Additional bone mineral density may arise acutely, may arise within times of loss to compensate for the unloading and uploading of bone. But in the long term, if we have low load on the bone, we're going to have a loss of bone. And the loss of bone is going to be inversely proportional to the peak level of bone. That is, if I have the highest peak that I can get, the rate of loss that I have is going to be slow. If I have a lower peak, the rate of loss is going to be fast. And this is where we start seeing differences in terms of bone mineral density between social genders of males and females as we get older. During juvenility and during adolescence, there's almost zero difference in terms of bone mineral density. As we get into adulthood, based off of use patterning as well as some hormonal influences in between androgen and estrogen, we see a higher bone mineral density in males relative to females. Once again, the social genders here. That difference maintains itself from the beginning of that consolidation phase through the involution phase, where males will be higher than females. And because males are higher than females, the rate of loss is faster in females than it is in males. And this is where we start getting into some of that talking point within the algorithm about osteoporosis. There's two things we have to look at here. Is it osteoporosis or is it osteoporotic changes? Osteoporosis is an issue of genetic. It deals with the inability to have the appropriate amount of peak bone mineral density at the end of the growth phase. We don't put down enough bone with osteoporosis. Osteoporotic change is going to occur because of excessive disuse that takes place. So we're trying to maximally lay down bone to adult levels between the ages of 10 and the ages of about 22. And then we're going to attempt to maintain that over the next 2 to 3 decades of life so that by the fourth decade of life, we are still maintaining that peak. Any abnormality in laying that down up into that fourth decade of life is going to be osteoporosis. The occurrence of issues of osteoporosis are related to that peak bone mineral density, and it is a genetic issue. The total bone mineral density in all bones is an issue independent of age or gender if the person has osteoporosis. The total bone mineral density that we see is independent of age or gender, but is dependent upon the total amount of load being experienced and all the factors that are going to allow for growth to take place within the bone. Which means that if you're male and you happen to have a low peak, you will have osteoporosis. If you're female and you have a low peak, you will have osteoporosis. There are several factors that come into play independent of the dietary issues. And this include metabolic disease conditions, overfatness, metabolic syndrome, chronic inflammatory issues that are going to impact the metabolic process within the bone, that's going to increase reactive oxidative species and oxidative stress that will cause issues with peak bone mineral density that tend to get associated with osteoporosis. People with osteoporosis will have inappropriate responses to growth signals, where they'll minimize the increase in trabecular bone growth during maturation and growth spurts, that will lead to weakened bone.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
This is different than osteoporotic changes. Osteoporotic changes will occur post-growth phase, within the consolidation, within the involution phase. So after age 22. The osteoporotic changes that take place post-growth phase is not where we didn't have enough laid down. It's where the rate of reabsorption is greater than the rate of mineralization during the normal bone turnover process. That is an osteoporotic change. That is not osteoporosis. The general osteoporotic conditions that get associated with aging are also associated with a secondary bone issue known as osteopenia, which is death of the bone tissue that come about due to homeostatic disruption of the osteocytes, the cells that are trying to maintain that bone mineral matrix, the bone tissue. That typically occurs due to limited stresses on the bones themselves that do not get reversed. Osteopenic changes can lead to a diagnosis of osteoporosis. However, it's not like the chicken and the egg. It's not like one's going to lead to the other. They happen simultaneously. Osteopenic issues lead to the diagnosis of osteoporosis, but is not the genetic disease osteoporosis. Osteopenic changes leading to osteoporosis is due to excessive osteoporotic changes, not due to osteoporosis. And that's because the underlying physiology of the issue in between osteoporosis and osteopenic changes leading to osteoporotic changes or osteoporotic changes leading to osteopenic changes is the difference between can we prevent it and can we reverse it versus is it something that's going to happen by itself. Genetic osteoporosis is neither preventable nor is it reversible, regardless of what we hear from the pharmaceutical companies, such as in the advertising that we listen to, as it lies in the not providing enough bone mineral density during the growth phases. We did not get to peak. Regardless of whether we're looking at true osteoporosis or the osteopenic changes, the osteoporotic changes leading to the clinical diagnosis of osteoporosis, the key here is to maintain a bone mineral density that is at 0.9 grams per cubic millimeter or higher. That is the key here. The issue that we look at in terms of that osteoporotic change is due to reduced loading. That reduced loading that leads to the osteopenic responses. So osteoporotic responses lead to osteopenic responses, which will lead to the clinical diagnosis of osteoporosis. That whole issue is reversible. It's also preventable. And it lies within Wolf's law of bone remodeling and the said principle that governs adaptations, specific adaptations to impose demands, all based on how we are going about loading the bone through everyday activities. Remembering that the rate of loss is going to be proportional to the total amount of bone mineral density at the initiation of loss. The lower my bone mineral density at the beginning of loss, the faster the loss will be. The greater my bone mineral density at the initiation of loss, the slower my bone mineral density will be. And we're always looking at bone mineral density at or around that fourth to fifth decade of life. And it doesn't matter whether it's female or male or the ethnicity of the person. A lot of this has to deal with regulation of genes and the reabsorptive genetic signals that come into play, leading to lower bone mineral density due to greater reabsorption and limited mineralization during the bone turnover. And only after peak depositing that's taking place. and this is where peak depositing taking place, is going to lead to a slow relative reduction. There is an assumed rate of degradation of around 0.7 to 0.9% per year for all individuals who are healthy. That percent is going to vary based off of the health status of the individual. It's also going to vary based off of, in terms of that range of 0.7 to 0.9% per year, based off of how much loading took place during the growth phase. And this is where we will start seeing some gender differences. And the gender differences that we see is based off of three key factors. The first factor is general body size. The larger the individual, the greater the load, and the greater the load, the greater the peak bone mineral density. The socially acceptable fitness behaviors that are seen, that is the gender role for socially acceptable fitness behaviors. Now, some of that gender role ideas have shifted over the last decade or so, but it's still within some socioeconomic and some cultures, subcultures, within, particularly the United States and around the world, where we do see gender-specific differences taking place based off of gender-specific roles within fitness behaviors. There's also slight differences in endogenous hormone circulations that lead to changes in anabolic responses. This is where we start seeing differences in lean body mass and fat mass in between our social term genders, in between males and females, that lead to the general inclination that men tend to have greater bone mineral density and a lower propensity for suffering osteoporotic changes than women. And it goes back to that idea that was pitched within the advertisement that it is a woman's issue, that is a female disease. We'll get to why that's an issue here in a second. Regardless of the gender, the larger the person, the slower the rate of loss. The greater the lean body mass, the greater the fat-free mass. Higher amounts of anabolic hormones, greater anabolic regulation, lower anabolic dysregulation, lower inflammatory response. Which means that the more physically active I am, the greater my lean body mass happens to be, the lower my inflammation levels happen to be, the higher my anabolic responses happen to be, which means that I'm going to have greater amount of bone mineral density and a lower end on the assumed rate of degradation, the assumed rate of loss. One of the things we have to look at here in terms of that osteoporotic issue has to deal with the clinical diagnosing that we use. Most of the times when we start looking at the diagnosing of osteoporosis, it goes back to that advertisement of who is going to be at risk and who is going to be advertised for medical treatment and therapeutic treatment for osteoporotic disease. The diagnosis comes into play based off of Z-line score relative to normal bone mineral density. That is, how far away from the normal curve in terms of standard deviations is your bone mineral density? And we're looking at ranges of 1 to 2.5 standard deviations within that Z-score. If the loss exceeds 2.5 standard deviations, the ability to have the reversion of bone mineral density gets lost. And so once we get to that 2.5 standard deviations low, we reach a clinical diagnosis of osteoporosis, regardless of is it genetic or not. That is, we've reached the point of osteopenia taking place, and because we've reached the point of osteopenia taking place, we will have osteoporosis as a diagnosis. And once again, it's not that osteopenia is causing osteoporosis or osteoporosis is causing osteopenia. These happen simultaneously. What we want to do during the loss phase is try to keep us in a range of 1 to 2 Z-score lines below normal so we can have some sort of reversal. The idea about reversibility, the idea about preventability is based off of, are we talking about true osteoporosis or are we talking about clinically diagnosed osteoporosis. Clinically diagnosed osteoporosis can be reversed. However, true osteoporosis, genetic osteoporosis, cannot. We can prevent clinical osteoporotic diagnosis, clinical osteoporosis, by increasing the rate of mineralization through use, through loading the bones, through reducing inflammation within the body. The reduction in bone mineral density that we do see is going to be within the trabecular area of the bone, which means that the bone becomes more fragile. And because the bone becomes more fragile, the bone becomes more at risk for fracture. The bone mineral density reductions that we see is going to be relative to the internal resistance that the bone has. So because the bone is going to be losing trabecular bone, it's going to be the twisting and the shearing forces that the bone becomes less resistant to. The problem is that most of the movements that we do are going to be the twisting and the cutting across the bone forces. That means that the bone is now at greater risk for fracture, which means that by loading the bone and by providing any type of piezoelectric stress to the bone, putting electrical current through the bone, can reverse some of that trabecular loss. And that's regardless of whether we're talking about men losing bone or women losing bone in terms of the gender identification. When we start looking at this rate of loss, a lot of people start looking at it as being a postmenopausal issue, just like within the advertisement that we listen to. The problem with it is that it's a logical fallacy. It's a logical fallacy for the simple fact that the only people that we tend to look for the disease in are postmenopausal in terms of age range and women. Beyond the issue of when we actually screen for stuff, who we actually screen issues in, one of the reasons why we might see greater amounts of osteoporotic changes in women is they have lower bone mineral density than their male equivalents. Because they have lower bone mineral density than their male equivalents, the rate of loss proportional to the amount that's there means that they're going to have a greater rate of loss. Given the lower amount of bone mineral density at the initiation of loss, they're more likely to lose faster than their male equivalents. As we age, the rate of inflammation increases. That rate of inflammation triggers changes metabolically, which can reduce bone mineral density, which can cause issues to come about, in particular, increases of inflammatory factors, increases of cortisol, that's going to impact bone metabolism, leading to greater increases of reabsorption and lower total remineralization during turnover. Specific to women, as it relates to this idea about postmenopausal, is the idea about the loss of the cyclic pulsing of estrogen that will occur. The loss of the cyclic pulsing of estrogen tends to lead to the loss of the inhibitory signals on osteoclastic activity. That is, we lose some of the signals that are going to minimize how much reabsorption is taking place due to the loss of the estrogen signal. And this is where some people will talk about using estrogen therapy or having medicines that are going to somehow influence calcium regulation, parathyroid, calcitonin, vitamin D regulation on calcium, is somehow going to reverse that activity. Because of the change in inflammatory signals and because of the loss of the estrogen regulation on that regulation of inflammatory signals, we tend to see greater amounts of osteoclastic activity, and it's not because of a cause and effect issue, it's more of a correlative linkage issue. Taken together, there is an increased risk for osteoporosis, but if we allow it to manifest itself, it will not manifest itself strictly off of gender or strictly off of age. It is not a disease that is of postmenopausal female, but it's a disease that is an inherent issue to the total amount of bone mineral density that is deposited. That is how much bone was built during the growth phase and then maintained during the consolidation phase. It is not about how much bone got lost during the involution phase by itself. They are linked to each other, but it's not linkage in terms of this cause and effect that we tend to see play out, whether it's in the advertisements for taking the supplements or whether it's the advertisements for the medicines. Even if you look at the medicines within the recommendations that come with the medicines, it is about increasing total activity that's taking place, in particular, increasing weight-bearing activities that take place. The more you load the bones, the stronger the bones will be and the healthier the bones will be. The less you load the bones, the weaker the bones will be and the less healthy the bones will be. The better I can control my inflammatory status, the better my health status happens to be. The more healthy I am, the stronger my bones will be, the healthier my bones will be. Just like with every other system of the body, just like with every other tissue of the body. There's a lot of myths and misconceptions out there as it relates to bone health and bone turnover, but it all comes down to two key factors. Am I using the bone? If I'm using the bone's going to stay around. And it falls into that very simple statement of use it or lose it. If I don't use the bone, if I'm not physically active, the bone will not stay healthy, the bone will not stay around, and I will lose bone material. Well, thanks for listening. I know this got a little bit longer than some of the other podcasts. Hope you got a little bit out of it. There are links within the description to both the YouTube channel in terms of videos that go with this, in terms of the lectures that I provide to students as it relates to bone health. There will be subsequent talks in terms of the pathophysiology of osteoporosis that will be going into the YouTube channel as well. So please stay tuned for those. Thanks for listening. Hopefully you got a little bit out of the conversation. Please make sure you give us that big 5-star rating, give us that big thumbs up, letting us know that we're doing a good job. Please share out with all of your friends and family. Please follow us here on the podcast as well as on YouTube. The written stuff in Substack as well as the quick takes that get posted occasionally into Threads and onto Instagram. Stay tuned for further discussions as it relates to the myths and misconceptions that we have about how the human body works and how we can go about living a healthier life.